My name is Cheryl, and I want to tell you my scary story. I have lived in the countryside since I was a child. I'm from an area where there are many old historic houses. Many of my friends boasted about the age of their possessions, but I could boast of something much more special. There is an old tile factory in my yard that belongs to my family. To be more specific, there are several buildings that make up this old tile factory. They stretched across both sides of the entrance to the yard, and although they aroused admiration among my friends, they could be terrifying at night. Often, when I came home late, I would run across the yard as to not look at the broken windows and dark entrances. This story happened one winter afternoon when I was walking home from school. There was only one bus every hour from my village, so when I finished school after 8 lessons, especially in winter, I would go home right when it got dark outside. That day, I had to cross the yard again. So as always, whenever I crossed the street, I ran quickly towards the house. About halfway there, I looked up and saw that a woman was standing in one of the rooms of the building, the entrance to which was covered with a white sheet. I stopped. At first, I was terrified and felt goosebumps across my body. Who could it be? However, after a while, when the figure left the room, I noticed that it was none other than my aunt. I breathed a sigh of relief.
"Hey, Auntie,"
I said as I waved at her. She gave me a friendly smile and responded,
"Hi, how's school going?"
But at that moment, I began to feel that something was wrong. Why didn't she have a flashlight with her? It was dark. I looked at her closely and noticed that she was very pale and her smile seemed forced.
"Everything's fine,"
I replied. Auntie smiled even wider, which suddenly scared me. I held back a shiver. Suddenly, an idea popped into my head.
"Which bus did you take home from work today?"
I asked her. There was only one bus that came to our village, and it was the one I took home from school. Her answer told me everything I needed to know.
"There was a lot of traffic today, and I didn't want to wait, so I took a different bus,"
she said. I didn't even look at her face. I immediately ran towards the house, not waiting for a reaction. As I said, there was only one bus to my village, so my aunt couldn't have taken another bus. Also, I only realized it once I got inside my house. But my aunt was working until 8 p.m. that day, and it was only 5 p.m. When I told my family about what happened, there was a lot of confusion. Grandma called my aunt, and Grandma and Dad went out to search the yard. Fortunately, the strange being, or whatever it was no longer there. After this incident, for several weeks, my parents gave me a lift to school by car, and I never entered any of the old buildings again. To this day, I wonder what that creature was and why it took on the appearance of my aunt.
Hey Wansee, this is a story that my mom's grandfather told her and now I want to share it with you. I'm a guy from India, you can call me Mark. To give a little context, this event happened way back in 1966 when my mom's grandfather worked in the Indian Army as a quartermaster. He was a very strong man and there was almost nothing that could scare him. It was a frigid winter night in 1966. He was posted in an area called Ladakh, and the temperature there reached below the freezing point several times. That night, he was doing his patrolling duty in the area around the camp. This was when people used to ride horses, so he was patrolling on his horse. While he was out, he saw a strange tent in the distance. He was not alone though, as there were a few officers patrolling along with him. They went together to check out the tent, and what he saw sent a chill down his spine. He saw several disfigured people dancing at what seemed to be a party. Otherworldly music was being played, and to his surprise, none of the people were wearing winter clothing. On that chilly winter night, which was next to impossible to bear, they were fine without any warmth. The next thing he noticed was that many of the people's feet were twisted around backwards. He didn't need to see anything else to know who these people were. As soon as they saw him and his fellow officers, they shouted,
"Hey look, we have some government officers as guests."
They then invited them to the party. Though the officers were hesitant, they accepted the offer. The strange people offered to serve them food, but the army officers requested for them to put the food in a bag for later as they were already full. They went home with those bags and when they opened them, found strange meats including some human parts and some unusual bones. The following night, the officers returned to the same place while patrolling, but there were no signs to be found of the people or the tent. It had all disappeared as though nothing had even happened.
Hi, my name is Maria. This is a true story that happened to me. I am 15 years old and I live in the Philippines. Just to let you know, I am currently in my third year of junior high school, which in the Philippines is the 9th grade. Our class starts at 12 noon and ends around 6:45 or 7 in the evening. In our country, there is a vehicle we call the tricycle. It is a three-wheeled vehicle made with a motorcycle and a sidecar. I usually go home with one of my classmates, but one day, she was sick and didn't attend our class. Anyways, our class ended late that night, and we all got out from school around 7:10 at night. I was waiting for a tricycle for about 10 minutes, but unfortunately, there weren't any at that time. I got frustrated and decided to walk home, even though our house is far from our school. I was walking for about 5 minutes when a tricycle stopped in front of me. I was relieved, thinking maybe I wouldn't have to walk home, but quickly got scared when I saw the driver. He was kind of handsome. He looked like he was 19 or 20 years old and had black hair. I know you're all wondering why I was scared, and the reason is, he was smiling from ear to ear while staring at me. I was asking myself whether or not I should get into the tricycle or not, but got in after thinking about how late it already was and how far from home I still was. I told the driver my address and he started driving. I was very nervous, so I got my phone out of my pocket and texted my parents the plate number of the tricycle. "How old are you, miss?" said the driver, breaking the silence. I got goosebumps hearing his voice. It was deep and creeped me out. I awkwardly told him I was 15. "You're in 9th grade, am I correct?" he asked. "Yes, sir," I answered. He was asking me personal questions like, what are my hobbies? What time do I go home from school? And do I usually go home this late? He was busy talking to me when he saw an old lady on the side of the street, waiting for a tricycle. He stopped the vehicle right in front of the old lady, and the old lady got into the tricycle. The lady told him her address, and the man started driving again. The old lady was busy looking for her money in her big purse, when she suddenly stopped and looked at me. She whispered and told me that her house was not far from here, and she suggested that I stay with her, since she noticed that there was something off with this man. As soon as the tricycle stopped in front of her house, we quickly got off the vehicle and paid the driver. We entered her house and I called my parents to pick me up. I told them what happened, and they quickly thanked the old lady. Ever since that incident happened, my dad has been picking me up from school every night. Months later, my family and I were watching TV when I saw the driver in the news. The news stated that he was a wanted criminal who had killed many girls who had finally been arrested after 2 years. The news also mentioned that he killed girls who were 17 to 20 years old. I was shocked and terrified, remembering how I felt there was something off about him. I was lucky I wasn't one of the girls he killed, and I am very thankful for the older lady who saved me from that man. Until now, I still wonder what would have happened to me if that lady hadn't saved me from that guy. It was 2019 and I was around 10 years old when this happened. I live in the southeast of England, and unfortunately, this is where a lot of criminals get sent after being let out of prison. This made me feel scared and worried about what might happen to me when I was a young girl. I often had strangers approach me. Nevertheless, our community was tight-knit and everyone knew everyone. I lived on the main road and within a 10-minute walk from my aunts, uncles, and grandparents. The story begins on a day during summer holidays, and I had spent all day out with my friends. My mom called me at around 6 to tell me that dinner was ready, and before I came in, she asked if I could drop off some birthday cards around my nan's house. Of course, I said yes. My friends live that way, and so it meant I could be out with them a little longer. We walked down the main road and said our goodbyes, and I trailed off to my nun's. Once I arrived there, I spoke to my nun for a while and then hurried off home. I was quite independent for my age, so I didn't feel the need to call my mom on the way home. As I was walking, I felt a buzz in my pocket. My mom was just calling as I was gone a little longer than she had anticipated, and she was beginning to get worried. I reassured her that everything was fine and that she could go on prepping the table. She said she would rather stay on the phone with me and that it's no problem. I was nearly home, about 5 minutes left to walk, when a man approached me on a bike. He was fat and ginger, with grubby clothes and an awful smile. He slowed down as he got closer to me and said in the most awful voice, "Hey kid, do you want to go to the beach with me?" My heart dropped. I froze, not knowing what to say. My mom must have heard the voice down the phone and began to shout loud enough for him to hear, "Hey, who are you?" He must have heard her as he quickly biked off. My dad came to meet me and walked me the rest of the way home, and obviously all my family was informed of what happened. My granddad said he knew him and that he seemed harmless and was probably just trying to be friendly. A couple of years later, y'all sat down for a family meeting. The same guy had just been charged for the murder of a young girl. I instantly felt sick and dizzy, and I had to sit down. What if that were me? I cannot imagine what would have happened if my mom hadn't called me that day and startled him off. In the summer of 2021, my kids and I went on a road trip to visit my sister who lives in a different state. I was driving the car while my children were playing with their toys in the back of the car. After around 3 hours, my children went to sleep and I started feeling like I really needed to pee. It was a hot day, and I had to stay hydrated, but that obviously meant lots of bathroom stops. After driving for what felt like another hour with no rest stops in sight, I drove down a road into a nearby forest. Just to be clear, I'm a woman, and I don't mind relieving myself in nature, especially when I really have to go. After all, that is how nature intended people to do their business. I parked the car near the road and locked it. Before you judge me, I just want to clarify that I left the car window slightly open, so my children would have access to fresh air, but they weren't open wide enough for anyone to stick their hand or even their finger inside. I didn't go far into the woods. I wanted to have my car in sight all the time. After making sure nobody was around, I squatted down and relieved myself. When I finished, I went back to my car. Before driving off, I turned around to check on my children and almost screamed after seeing that thing. On the back seat, inches away from my children, was a giant, gross red beetle. It was the size of a TV remote, way too thick to crawl through the small gap in the window, and it was crawling all over the car, leaving a black, tar-like substance everywhere. I grabbed a tissue and quickly grabbed the beetle. I could feel its legs moving through the tissue. I threw it out of the car and drove away immediately. Fortunately, my children were still sleeping, and the beetle didn't crawl onto them. When we arrived at my sister's house, I used the sponge to get rid of the tar-like substance from the seats and tried to forget about what happened. I didn't tell anyone about it. After a week, it was time to drive home. While driving by the forest again, I remembered about the beetle, but thank goodness we didn't encounter it again. To this day, I'm still wondering how it got into the car. I just had to get this story off my chest. Every time I see a beetle, I think of this strange encounter. Who knows how many of these giant beetles there are, and who knows what they use that black substance for?
The story I am telling you now is something that happened to me 7 years ago when I was in college. At that time, I had a best friend named Charles. Charles dreamed of being an exorcist and always said that he wanted to exorcise evil spirits with his own hands. Since he wanted to practice, he would often use a Ouija board to summon evil spirits. One day, he told me that he needed help exorcising evil spirits and asked me to use the Ouija board with him. Since I didn't believe in such things, I just went to Charles' house without thinking much about it. I couldn't have imagined the consequences that choice would bring. At midnight, we lit candles and started using the Ouija board. But that's when the event I will never forget occurred. Charles called out,
"Devil! Evil spirit! Come here!"
Then Charles asked if anyone was present in the room, and the pointer moved to yes. When Charles asked, "What is your name?" the pointer moved to Moloch. Charles muttered to himself,
"Okay, Moloch, show us your physical form. What do you look like?"
After this, the pointer didn't move, and the room was still and silent. Then Charles shouted,
"Show us your terrifying face!"
But at that moment, suddenly a pair of eyes appeared on Charles' forehead. I screamed in surprise. I thought I was hallucinating. Charles looked over at me, not knowing what was going on, and the eyes on his forehead, which looked like snake eyes, moved around very strangely. When I pointed to Charles' forehead and shouted, "Your forehead!" Charles touched his forehead and screamed,
"Ah! What is this?"
Then a small mouth appeared on his forehead, and the mouth spoke in a strange voice.
"Look in the mirror, Charles!"
And then deep red blood flowed out of the mouth and covered Charles' face. Charles ran into the hallway, howling, and I followed him. Charles screamed and went into the bathroom, turned on the shower, and a moment later came out of the bathroom soaking wet. Some of the blood remained smeared on his face, giving him a faint red glow. Charles stood there with a blank expression. The eyes and mouth were gone from his forehead. Charles and I couldn't say anything. What the hell happened? Charles' body was shaking. Then Charles ran back into the room and shouted,
"I know how to exorcise! I'll send these evil spirits to heaven!"
Charles picked up a book and opened it. The title of the book seemed to be about exorcism. But at that moment, I saw it. Something crawled out from the corners of the dark room. They were people the size of small dwarves. Their bodies were black, with red bumps sticking out of their backs and long tails. They were crawling on all fours toward Charles. I thought I was hallucinating once again, but Charles was seeing them too. I saw his fearful expression and the tears in his eyes. The black dwarves crawled towards Charles and began to gnaw at his legs. Blood flowed from his legs as he screamed in pain. I shouted to Charles in a trembling voice, asking what to do, and he managed to look at the book he was holding and began to recite a spell. However, he could not read properly because of the pain and just continued to scream. Then I saw numerous black blisters forming on Charles' legs, and I saw black liquid bursting out of them. The dwarves were crawling up Charles' body, gnawing at every part of him. Charles' eyes rolled back, and he screamed so much that he lost consciousness. I thought that his parents would come to the room because Charles was screaming so loudly, but for some reason, no one came to the room. After about 5 minutes, Charles' whole body was covered with thousands of black blisters, and black liquid covered his body. I couldn't believe what I was seeing, and I didn't know what to do. Eventually, the black dwarves crawled back into the corner and disappeared. I stood there, blankly, unable to do anything. Tears flowed from my eyes like crazy, and when I looked at the clock, it was 3 a.m. I called the police, and the police and Charles's parents were shocked when they saw Charles' body. They rushed Charles to the hospital. They asked me what the hell had happened, but no matter how much I told them, they never believed me. It was natural that they couldn't believe it. If it were me, I wouldn't have believed it either. Charles received emergency surgery and fortunately did not die, but it took 3 months for his body to recover to its original state. The doctor said she had no idea what caused Charles's body to suddenly become blistered like that. Ever since that night, Charles has not used the Ouija board again, and he's also given up on his dreams of becoming an exorcist. He's become a very quiet person. He does not socialize, and mostly just stays in his room. Time has passed, and I do not keep in touch with Charles anymore, but sometimes I wonder how he's doing now.
My name is Samira, and this is a haunting story that was passed down from my grandfather to my mother, and now to me. Years ago, before my parents came to Canada, they used to live in a small village in a war-torn country in East Africa. During that time, there was a war that had been happening in the country for the last 4 decades, and because of that, there were reported hauntings in many places based on the deaths that were happening daily. To give an idea of what might have happened, I come from a long line of exorcists. So there are a lot of instances of family members dealing with the supernatural. My maternal grandfather was notorious for his experiences, and he did so many exorcisms that half the time he would encounter spirits, almost on a daily basis. In this story, we'll call him Jabbar. One day, Jabbar was riding his bike through the forest, heading to another village to run an errand. Several miles down the road, he encountered a gentleman who was walking down the road. The man halted my Jabbar on his bike, and since he was naturally generous to people, he stopped his bike to see if the man needed any help. The man approached and appeared to be a well-dressed individual. He was wearing a white robe, with honey brown skin and cornrows on his head, not a single speck of dirt from travel. The man asked if he could hitch a ride with Jabbar, and he agreed to give him a lift. The man climbed on the bike with him, and so he continued down the road. Several miles down the road, the man told Jabbar that they were close to his destination, so he stopped the bike and allowed the man to get off. Then the man walked into the bushes and just disappeared. Jabbar was shocked, and he stood there frozen for a good minute before he snapped back to reality. Jabbar continued to his next destination after that. It's been decades since my mother heard that story from my grandfather, and we believe the man was a lost soul who was a casualty in the war.
This story is about something I experienced about 20 years ago when I was in my early 20s. At that time, I had broken up with my girlfriend and was going through such miserable days. I wanted to focus on something new to forget her. I decided to go hiking, and while looking at the map, I decided to pick a mountain to go to. Among them, I found a mountain whose name was unfamiliar to me, and I chose to go to that one. Once I arrived, I started up the mountain path, and it seemed like a normal place. As I was climbing the mountain, though, The path ended at some point. However, I was still feeling upset and reluctant to go home. So I continued up the mountain and into the forest. Then at some point, I heard the sound of something moving up ahead of me. I was startled and stopped, thinking it was a wild animal. It sounded like an animal aggressively eating something. I lowered my body to the ground and slowly looked in the direction the sound was coming from. And there was something moving there. When I saw it, I almost fainted. It was covered in red fur, and I couldn't recognize its face. I could only make out its huge nose and mouth, each tooth almost as big as my thumb. And it was eating something. The sound of it chewing down to the bone echoed through the mountains. Its large hands tore the flesh of the lying beast, as if it were tearing paper. The creature's hands were similar to human hands, but its fingers were long and thick, about 3 times as long as a human's. What it was eating was the carcass of a huge animal, like a bear. I felt like vomiting, but I held it back with all my might, thinking that if I threw up right there, it would catch me. I turned around quietly, but the sound of the trees and bushes moving made it look in my direction. It quickly took off a huge chunk of meat that must have weighed about 10 pounds in a single bite, and then started to run towards me. When it raised its body, it seemed to be at least 8 feet tall, and the sight of its enormous body and appearance took my breath away. Its eyes were bright yellow, and its pupils were so small that they were almost invisible. It ran on 2 legs, just like a person. It ran toward me with its mouth full of meat and at an incredibly fast speed. I thought, I'm going to die right here. I didn't even scream. My legs felt weak, but I ran with all my might. Behind me, I could hear its heavy breathing and footsteps very clearly. I even felt as if the air it was exhaling was touching my back, but I couldn't tell if it was an illusion or real. I ran so fast that my feet felt like they were burning, and after a while, I didn't hear any more sounds from behind me, so I looked back and saw that it had stopped and was looking somewhere else. I saw something like a deer running in the distance, and then it ran toward the deer. I thought this was my chance to get away, so I ran as fast as I could down the mountain. I heard a deer crying out, and then the sound of bones breaking behind me. But I kept running without looking back. It seemed like I must have descended the mountain in just 30 minutes, even though it took me 3 hours to climb to where I was. I think that because of the extreme situation, I was able to push my body beyond its normal limits. When I got back to the base of the mountain, my leg muscles were so sore that I couldn't even press the accelerator in the car. I barely managed to find the local police station, and I had told them about the strange creature in the mountain. But the police didn't believe me. They said that people are often eaten by wild animals on the mountain. They said that all the bones and flesh would be gone by the time they found the remains, and only skulls were ever found. They said there must be some terrible beast that lives up on the mountain. I pleaded and told them that it wasn't a normal animal, but they simply wouldn't believe me. The thing I saw, it moved its hands like a person, ripped the meat, and ran on 2 feet. It wasn't an animal or a human. It was something else. I went home and Googled it to see if anyone else had reported anything about it, but I couldn't find any information about any creature similar. To this day, I still don't know what that creature was or how I managed to get away from it alive.
This happened from December 10th through 11th, 2019. It was my cousin's birthday, December 11th, and was also the same day of our family reunion, which obviously means that all my cousins, uncles, and aunties were there. We celebrated our family reunion in a very rural province in the Philippines. There was a swimming pool there, so we all gathered near it. Around 5 p.m., we were swimming and just enjoying ourselves and having fun. We played all types of games, like what normal kids do at a family reunion. Around exactly midnight on December 11th, we sang happy birthday to our cousin Ashley. But as we were singing happy birthday, I noticed something extremely weird. When we were singing happy birthday, we weren't in the water anymore. but all of us were still wearing our bathing suits and wet clothes. While we were singing and enjoying ourselves, I looked away from Ashley and everyone, and I saw Ashley in the far corner of the pool, standing on the water. I rubbed my eyes just to make sure I wasn't seeing an illusion, but she was still there, just staring at me. She wasn't smiling, she just stared. I looked back to Ashley and everyone else surrounding her who was singing Happy Birthday, and she was there. We finished singing, and everyone was already taking pictures of her with her cake, like nothing had happened. I didn't tell anybody about what I saw until the next morning. I still remember sleeping beside my other cousin, and my other cousin slept beside Ashley. I got woken up by my cousin's alarm, which also means that a few of my cousins also got woken up by it. I noticed that Ashley was still there sleeping, and it was such a relief. I thought something bad would have happened because of what I saw. A few hours had passed, and it was time to head home. I wasn't in the same car as Ashley, since there were a lot of us, and we wouldn't fit in one car. It turned out that the car Ashley was riding in got into a car accident. Nobody got hurt except for Ashley, and sadly, she died exactly on her birthday. I felt so sorry for her and distraught about not knowing that what I saw might have been a warning. I told my cousins and her parents about seeing her doppelganger, but they didn't believe me. To this day, I still wonder about what I really saw that night, and if her doppelganger had anything to do with her passing.
Hi, my name is Ellen. I used to live in this old house that was made entirely of wood. It had two houses combined into one building, and there was a forest just behind the building. Many scary things happened while I was living at that house, and I'm gonna tell you some of them. The first story is about the other house that was connected to ours. My family and I used to have a neighbor, but after a few months, they moved out, and there was no one living there. But after they moved out, we started hearing a baby crying at night. And not just the sound of a baby crying, we also heard a grown woman crying and laughing. We looked around and never found any sign of a woman or baby. The second story is about this huge mango tree that was behind our house. It was so close to our house that every time a mango fell from the tree, it would hit our rooftop and make a loud bam sound like someone threw a rock on it. But years later, my dad decided to chop the tree down for our safety, because when there were bad storms, we were afraid that the tree would fall down and hit our house. After my dad chopped down the tree, I thought that the sound of the mangoes falling on the house would go away, but sometimes I would still hear the same loud thud on our rooftop. The third story is about my mom. My mom knows how to bake cakes, so sometimes people will order a cake from her. She would usually bake cakes at night because during the day, she was busy with her work. She told me that every night she would bake cakes, she would hear the sound of someone running across our rooftop. The fourth story is about my little sister, who is now 8 years old. We used to have a babysitter, and my little sister really loved her. She would follow her around everywhere, even to the bathroom. But there was one time when she followed the babysitter to the bathroom, but then she came running to me and my siblings, since my parents weren't home. We asked her why she was crying, and she said that the babysitter had a scary face. After my little sister said that, all of us ran to our parents' room, bringing her with us. We did that because we knew that our babysitter was actually cleaning our parents' room the whole time and never went to the bathroom. Many other scary things have happened, but it's hard to remember all of them. We have already moved out of that house, but I still wonder if all these incidents were connected. Why was it making those sounds and scaring my sister? Is it still out there somewhere?
Hello, my name is Anoush. This incident happened to me in 2017, when I was 10 years old. My friend Jasper and I went to the same school and lived in the same neighborhood. Every weekend, we went to a forest nearby and played there. The forest wasn't very dense and had a few houses in it, so our parents didn't worry about us going there. One day, Jasper and I were walking into the forest and came across a house. As we walked up to it, a woman came out of the house and noticed us. She smiled and waved at us, and then called us over and told us to buy some green chilies. She gave us some money and told us where to go. She looked very friendly, and even offered us some more money to buy something for ourselves. So, we accepted and went to buy the chilies. After buying the chilies, we both returned to the house and gave them to the woman. She told us to wait and went inside. I heard a noise from inside. It sounded like a blender, but I wasn't sure. So I peeked through the window and saw her blending the chilies into a paste. Then I saw her leave the kitchen, so I went back over to the door where Jasper was. What happened next was the most horrific thing I've ever experienced in my life. The woman showed us the bowl of chili paste she made, and then took it and smothered it all over her own face and eyes. Jasper and I started screaming as she laughed with her face covered in spicy chili paste. We started running away from her, but she caught me. Jasper managed to run away from the house, but she brought me into her house and locked the door. She told me to take the paste and smother it on my face. I refused and threw the bowl down and started to cry and scream for help. She then got very angry at me and started slapping me, trying to silence me. Then I heard a noise outside. It was my friend and the people from the houses nearby. My friend had called for them to help. The woman heard the people and tried to run away through the back door, but she was caught. Some women in the group of neighbors recognized us and took us to our parents and told them about everything that had happened. Jasper and I listened to them talking. The woman in that house had apparently escaped from a mental institution and killed a mother and son who lived in that house and was living there for a few weeks. Jasper and I went to therapy and we recovered from what had happened. I'm 16 now and Jasper is still my best friend. If he hadn't called for help, I probably would have died that day.
Hi, I'm Ratikan from India. I'm currently in high school and live in an urban area. This is the story of the incident that changed the course of my life. This incident happened when I was around 5 or 6 years old. At the time of the incident, we were living in my home village. Our house was a single story with 3 bedrooms, a kitchen, and a garage adjacent to our house. We kept old things like refrigerators and things we don't use anymore in the garage. One day, my father was cleaning out the garage when he found a beggar inside eating a rat. My father was very startled, and being a typical Indian dad, he threw the beggar out of the garage and started shouting at him. As this was happening, I heard some loud noises followed by my dad yelling, and I rushed outside to see what was going on. Once I arrived outside, I saw the beggar. He was a frail and scary-looking man, with 2 large scratches across his neck, which appeared to have been cut by something very sharp. His eyes were totally white, and even from far away, there was a terrible stench coming from him. When he noticed me, he turned to look over at me and grinned. His smile alarmed me and sent a shiver down my spine. When my father noticed him looking strangely at me, he must have gotten even angrier, and so he ran over and punched him. The beggar fell and seemed knocked out for a moment, but he quickly got back up and started cursing at my father with words in a language I could not understand. He seemed furious and looked around for something. When he found a hammer lying on the ground from my father cleaning out the garage, he grabbed the hammer and threw it towards my father, but his throw was weak so it didn't reach him. He began cursing at my father again, but my father ran him off and the beggar disappeared into the distance. After that day, nothing related to the beggar happened again, and he was nowhere to be seen. But then, on the 7th night after the incident, I had a disturbing nightmare. In the nightmare, I saw my father being attacked by the beggar. In the beggar's hands were a hammer and a nail, and he placed the nail up to my father's chest and drove the nail directly into his heart. After seeing this happen, I woke up in a panic, but I never told anyone because my family doesn't believe anything is real about those kinds of horrors and nightmares. After that night, I had no dreams about the beggar again. But then, on the 21st day after the incident, my father was found dead, lying on his bed with his eyes wide open. They were totally white. Our family was devastated. After the funeral rites were completed, I was in his bedroom, looking at the photos of him and fetching old things from under his bed. As I reached under there, I eventually touched something that I didn't recognize. It was the hammer from the garage that the beggar had thrown at my dad that day. I've had a guilty conscience since then for not telling anyone about my dream, since it may have prevented what happened. So here I am telling it to all of you. I plan to tell Mom everything soon, but I'm not sure what she will make of it. If there's anything I learned from all of this, it's to treat strangers kindly, because you never know what they might do if you anger them. And most importantly, I learned that we must cherish the time that we have with our loved ones. Though I received a warning that I didn't heed, there's no telling when any of us might lose a loved one without any warning at all.
Late one night, after my uncle had just finished work, he was driving down the highway from his workplace. He worked in another town and had to travel back and forth daily to our town. The trip was about 45 minutes each way. It was around 10 p.m., so he was really drowsy and just wanted to get home. After about 20 minutes of driving, he heard a distant scream from up ahead. But as it was foggy, he couldn't really see far ahead. His headlights glowed faintly in the fog, barely lighting up the road in front of him. A minute or two after he heard the scream, he saw two faint lights in the distance, blinking. After driving a couple more hundred meters, he saw a car pulled over to the side with its hazards flashing. It was an old beater, barely roadworthy. Next to it, a man was jumping madly up and down. My uncle, who is generally very careful, for some reason decided to help the guy despite the sketchy vibe he gave off. After pulling over, the man walked up to my uncle's car window. He asked my uncle if he could catch a ride, as his car had broken down. Despite my uncle wanting to help, he knew there was something off about this situation. The man looked slightly crazed. He was fidgeting, and he kept looking out into the distance. My uncle turned to look where the man was looking, and he saw three other figures seemingly watching from a distance. Despite my uncle now definitely knowing that this was some sort of trap, he casually offered to call roadside assistance. However, the guy immediately said no and started getting angry. He began frantically tugging at the door handle, trying to open my uncle's car in any way possible. The man stepped back for just a moment, and trying to be inconspicuous, my uncle shifted the car into gear and started pulling away out onto the highway. The guy, realizing this, let out an unearthly scream and sprinted towards my uncle's car. But he didn't catch up because my uncle floored it and was now back on the road. As my uncle checked the rearview mirror, he saw the man and the three figures who had been watching from a distance, all holding what seemed to be some kind of weaponry. He sped away into the darkness, never looking back after that. Even after my uncle arrived at home, he was still extremely nervous and unsettled, and he immediately went to bed. He doesn't like talking about this encounter, but I feel the need to share it as a warning to others to be careful when driving late at night. This happened to me a few weeks ago, and I'm still receiving treatment at a psychiatric clinic. I don't know why this horrible incident happened, or whether it was my fault or just bad luck. I hope the people who hear this story can help me find an answer. I remember the day clearly. It was a weekend afternoon, and I was lying on the sofa watching TV, enjoying my leisure time. But then the doorbell suddenly rang, though I wasn't expecting anyone. I jumped up in surprise because there were hardly any people who would visit my house without telling me first. I went to the door and asked who it was, and surprisingly, I heard a friendly voice answer, "Hey, it's Shane, your friend?" I paused for a moment. Did I have a friend named Shane? I couldn't remember. But he kept talking. "We were in the same class in elementary school." I finally opened the door and looked at his face. I didn't really recognize him, but I thought that because so much time had passed, he looked different now than he did back then. Then he pointed to his temple with his finger. There was a very big and ugly scar there. He said, "Don't you remember me? When we were in elementary school, you stabbed me here with a pen. It really hurt. But you didn't even apologize to me. You were so bad, right?" I was startled for a moment, as if I had been hit on the back of the head. I didn't know why. Maybe it was because of guilt, or because I was so shocked. A previously lost memory came back to me. I said with a trembling voice and a slight laugh,
"But you only bled a little back then. Why is there such a big scar? It couldn't have been from that, right?"
He took a pen out of his pocket. It looked old and rusty. I realized that it might even be the pen I had stabbed him with back then. He looked at the pen for a moment and then wiped his tears. Then he said, "You don't know how much it hurt back then. I tried not to forget that pain because I have to get revenge on you. I was afraid that if I forgot that pain, I would lose my desire to get revenge on you. So whenever I couldn't remember the pain well, I stabbed my temple so that I could feel it again. And now there's a big scar." While staring into my eyes, he stabbed his temple with the pen. He screamed out in excruciating pain while clenching his jaw. Then he held the bloody pen up to my face and said, "It's always the same pain, but I never get used to it. It's always painful. Well, it's your turn to feel it now. I've stabbed my temple 180 times in 15 years. You have to be stabbed 180 times too." His eyes were filled with rage and madness. He held the pen high and stared at my temple, as though he was aiming the pen. I tried to close the door quickly, but he came close to me and grabbed my arm. I grabbed his hand and pulled it off of me and pushed him away. But he pulled me down, and we rolled on the floor and fought. Luckily, I got on top of him and punched him in the temple. He screamed in pain and writhed. I held him down and shouted for help loud enough for the neighbors to hear. The neighbors called the police, thankfully, but Shane continued to yell at me.
"You better settle your debt quickly! The more time passes, the more times you'll have to get stabbed! This debt will never go away! The interest will keep accumulating!"
The police arrived shortly after and arrested him. And after that day, I hastily moved to another city. However, I still live every day in fear. Fear that he might show up at my door once again. Sometimes I think about attempting to contact him and asking for forgiveness. I want to end this fear and live comfortably. But when I think of the horrible scar on his temple and his insistence that I pay my debt, I vow again to avoid him forever.
I have never really told anyone this story. However, I've been meaning to get it out in some way for the whole world to know. I recall it being a cool summer afternoon in 1991. I don't remember the exact date when this all happened, but I remember what I would see on the streets where I lived. My family and I are a family of five. Myself, my mom, my dad, my sister, and my baby brother. We've always been a friendly and generous family. My family is Mexican, and when we moved, we did not have much at the time. We moved into an apartment building that was right next to another apartment building in February of 1990. The apartment was not much, but we had to get by with what we had at the time. The first 2 or 3 months living in that cruddy apartment was all right. However, we did struggle at times in those few months. I was playing by myself outside this one day in May because I was bored of watching cartoons and wanted to actually get outside for once. I was around the backside of the apartment playing catch with a football with my uncle from my dad's side of the family. I remember it clearly because while we were playing, I couldn't help but notice the strong, horrendous smell of what seemed to be urine. My uncle seemed bothered too, because he walked towards me asking if I needed to use the bathroom. But I replied with a simple no, and that I was okay. When we were eating dinner that night, as we were eating, I glimpsed outside the window where you can see the outside of the other apartment. In a window of one apartment, I saw a brown-haired man who looked to be middle-aged and had his arms full of boxes and bags walking towards the dumpster. The man violently threw the stuff into the dumpster, and when he threw everything, I saw what looked like a blood-covered, severed hand fall out of a black bag. The man immediately picked up the severed hand, placed it in the dumpster, and speed-walked back to the front of the other apartment. I thought this occurrence was strange, but didn't even think to question whether that was a real hand or what he could have been carrying. I did see some other strange things happening with that man, but I don't want to get too deep into them. Perhaps some other time or in a different story I will. After that night, a very foul odor of what seemed like urine and roadkill would stink up our apartment for almost a year. It went on for so long, and this was one of the worst memories I have. I even suffered some trauma from it. One night, as I was trying to fall asleep, I started to hear heavy drilling, like a power drill being used. The sound was so disturbing and eerie that I get goosebumps even just thinking about it. I got up to look through the kitchen window to see who was drilling, but when I got to the living room, I saw my dad crouched by the window. I asked my dad what he was doing, and he came and quickly pulled me over and had me crouch beside him. He then told me something that made my entire body turn cold. There's a maniac living next to us. We sat there for about 10 minutes in the pitch dark of our living room, and although it was only 10 minutes, it felt like an eternity. The drilling finally stopped, and my dad and I both peeked through the window to check what was happening. We saw that same man comb his hair back and leave his place. I glanced through the window of his apartment and saw something that made me know there was something seriously wrong. There was a young boy passed out on a bed with the TV on in front of him. What bothered me the most was the fact that this boy was completely naked. No clothes at all. Not even underwear to cover himself. My dad told me to go back to my room so he could contact the police. I curled into a ball on my bed. Even with my eyes wide open, I could not think of anything else but the uncomfortable image of that unconscious naked teen on the bed. I ended up falling asleep after worrying for some time about what would happen next. A few months later, I was on my way back home with my grandma after staying with her. She was bringing me back to my apartment, and when we got there, we saw a swarm of police. An officer directed my grandma to park beside our apartment because they needed space for whatever they were doing. I was scared and holding onto my grandma tightly as she took us both to my place. She opened the door and my mom pulled us both into the room. I ran towards the living room window to see the swarm of police outside. I saw boxes and containers being dragged out from the apartment. And then I saw that same man being put into a police car, and I could swear I saw him look back at me. We moved out of our apartment complex a week later to stay with my uncle because my parents both agreed that we did not need the drama going on to ruin our lives. I am older now, and I later learned that the man who had been arrested was the serial killer Jeffrey Dahmer, who was known to have taken the lives of 17 men. He would not only kill, but would drug, cannibalize, and do other monstrous things to his victims. It's hard to see the world the same way after that traumatic experience. But what I've learned is, you should not trust people too easily.